Good morning, and welcome to Taisho, or Zen Talk. And for those of you who are new to this temple, please feel free to shift position if you need to during this talk. Make every effort to keep your back straight and simply listen. As I often do, I'm going to be working on a koan this morning. This one is a favorite that I want to revisit. Chan and her spirit separated. And especially with koans, just let it come in, wash through you. If something doesn't hit, so be it. Maybe years later, you go, oh, there it is. You know, now I see. So this whole issue of Zen training, Zen practice, it's a long-term proposition. This particular koan was considered a nanto koan, in other words, difficult to pass. According to Master Hakuin, who reformed and revitalized the koan system in Zen training. Really, though, many people don't find this koan particularly difficult, and I've come to feel that it's maybe more an issue of personality or affinity, maybe life experience. Often it is those koans that stump us, though, that are the most useful, because they steer us on a collision course with our own particular areas of blindness, submerged under the water like an iceberg. And they reveal those places where we don't function clearly. This translation is by Robert Aiken and Nelson Foster and revised by Michael Kieran, all teachers of the Diamond Sangha, which was, of course, established by Robert Aiken Roshi. So here's the case. Utsu asked a monk, "The woman Chen and her spirit separated. Which is the true Chen?" Woman's commentary: "If you realize the true one, then you'll know that emerging from one husk and entering another is like a traveler putting up in an inn. If this is still not clear, don't rush around recklessly. When you suddenly separate into earth, water, fire, and air, you'll be like a crab dropped into boiling water, struggling with your seven hands and eight legs. Don't say I never told you." Woman's verse: "The moon and the clouds are the same. Mountains and valleys are different. All are blessed. All are blessed. Is this one? Is this two?" Utsu asked a monk, "The woman Chen and her spirit separated, which is the true one?" Because there's a background story for this koan, I won't say much about Master Utsu, whose name in Japanese was Goso, except to say that he was a renowned Song Dynasty master and the teacher of Wan Wu, who compiled the Blue Cliff Record. Utsu appears four times in this particular collection of koans, which was compiled by Master Wu Men, and who was also, by the way, his Dharma descendant. This koan is based on a traditional Chinese folktale and can seem complex, but try to see through to the essence of the conflict, which is not about psychology, but about the nature of reality, the nature of our suffering as human beings. So here's the story, and I'll just read this. It's fairly long. There lived in Han Yang a man called Zhang, whose child daughter Chen was of peerless beauty. He also had a nephew named Zhao, a very handsome boy, and the children played together and were very fond of each other. Once Chen's father jestingly said to his nephew, "Someday I'll marry you to my little daughter." Both children remembered these words and they believed that they were betrothed. When Chen grew up, a man of rank asked for her in marriage, and her father decided to comply with this demand. Chen was greatly troubled by this decision, and as for Zhao, he was so angered and grieved that he resolved to leave home and go to another province. So the next day, he got a boat ready for his journey, and after sunset, without saying goodbye to anyone, he proceeded up the river. But in the middle of the night, he was startled by a voice calling to him, "Wait, wait, it's I." And he saw a girl running along the bank towards the boat. It was Chen. Cao was unspeakably delighted. She sprang into the boat, and they found their way safely to the province of, I think it's Su. In the province of Su, they lived happily for 6 years, and they had 2 children. But Chen could not forget her parents and often longed to see them again. At last she said to her husband, "Because in former times I could not bear to break the promise made to you, I ran away with you and I forsook my parents, although knowing that I owed them all possible duty and affection. Wouldn't it now be well to try and obtain their forgiveness?" "Do not grieve yourself about that," said Cao. "We will go to see them." And he ordered a boat to be prepared, and a few days later, they returned to their original home. According to custom in such cases, the husband first went to the house of Chen's father, leaving Chen alone in the boat. Chen's father welcomed his nephew with every sign of joy and said, "How much I have been longing to see you. I was often afraid that something had happened to you." Cao answered respectfully, "I'm distressed by the undeserved kindness of your words. Indeed, it's to beg your forgiveness that I've even come." But Chen's father did not seem to understand. He said, "To what matter do you refer?" "I feared," said Cao, "that you were angry with me for having run away with Chen. I took her with me to the province of Tu." "What Chen was this?" asked her father. "Why, your daughter Chen," answered Cao, beginning to suspect his father-in-law of some malevolent design. "What are you talking about?" said her father, with every appearance of astonishment. "My daughter Chen has been sick in bed all these years, really ever since the time you went away." "Well, your daughter Chen," returned Cao, becoming angry, "has not been sick. She has been my wife for 6 years, and we have 2 children. We have both returned to this place only to seek your pardon. Therefore, please do not mock us." For a moment, the two looked at each other in silence. And then Chen's father arose and, motioning to his nephew to follow, led the way to an inner room where a sick girl was lying. And Cao, to his utter amazement, saw the face of Chen, beautiful but strangely thin and pale. "She cannot speak," explained the old man, "but she can understand." And Chen's father said to her laughingly, "Cao tells me that you ran away with him and that you gave him 2 children. The sick girl looked at Cao and smiled, but remained silent. "Now come with me to the river," said the bewildered visitor to his father-in-law, "for I can assure you, in spite of what I have seen in this house, that your daughter Chen is at this moment in my boat." They went to the river, and there indeed was the young wife waiting. Seeing her father, she bowed before him and sought his pardon. Chen's father said to her, "If you are really my daughter, I have nothing but love for you. Yet, although you seem to be my daughter, there is something I do not understand. Come with us to the house." So the three of them went back towards the house. As they neared it, they saw that the sick girl, who had not before left her bed for years, was coming to meet them, smiling, as if much delighted. As the two Chens approached each other, but then, no one could tell how, they suddenly melted into each other and became one body, one person, one Chen, even more beautiful than before, and showing no signs of sickness or sorrow. Chen's father said to Cao, "Ever since the day of your going, my daughter was dumb, and most of the time, like a person who had taken too much wine. Now I know her spirit was absent." Chen herself said, "Really, I never knew that I was at home. I saw Cao going away in silent anger, and that same night, I dreamed that I ran after his boat. But now, I cannot tell which was really I. The eye that went away in the boat, or the eye that stayed home? So using this old, really ghost story of an old young woman who is apparently split in two by her love, Master Wutsu invites us to examine our own divided lives and to undertake the challenge of uncovering the truth of our own nature, our life which is beyond division. Truly, it's not even yours or mine. I cannot imagine that there is anyone here who cannot at some level resonate with this story of Qian. Most koan stories concern the lives of men, and they are usually monks. But Qian and He Cao are ordinary young people, struggling with issues of family, torn by completing loves, responsibilities. Most of us come to practice because, at some level, we feel conflicted. We don't feel right in our own skins. We may recognize that we spend our lives daydreaming, separated from the reality of our true life, lost in fantasy, thoughts, worries, addictions. Maybe we sense a disconnect between how we want to live, expressing love and generosity. Really, we'd all like to be like the Dalai Lama. And the way we actually see ourselves behaving from moment to moment. We want to bring our lives into alignment with what we know or believe to be true. For many of us, this sense of division is what brings us here. And yet, to be here, we must already, at some level, have a sense of underlying unity. Our longing for oneness functions at so many levels, the interpersonal, the ethical, the environmental, political. Each of us knows in our bones how absolutely exhausting it is to live a divided life, how painful it is to feel pulled apart by competing desires, how the fragmentation of our awareness saps our energy. Separation, splitting, it is debilitating, and it lays us flat, just like Qian, who was incapacitated in her own home. Starting to practice is the first step towards healing this divided life. Coming back to awareness over and over again is itself the way we begin to give up that ghost life and ground ourselves in what is real, what is whole. And that mental stability carries into our daily activities so that our usual habitual tendency to turn away from this moment, dissociate, becomes more and more unappetizing. We stop multitasking and find the peace of doing one thing at a time. Practicing the precepts, which after all are nothing more than the expression of this harmonized mind, becomes more natural. Old patterns of behavior and thought which have troubled us, sometimes for years, loosen their hold, may even fall away. As laymen and women, our practice life is right in the middle of intimate relationship with friends, families, partners. It's not easy, but opening into our lives, whatever comes, helps each of us not to get caught in forms of spiritual bypassing, misusing our Zazen practice to avoid tough situations. Usually, it's those who know us best who just won't let us get away with that. But Master Wutsu is not just talking about understanding and navigating with skills the waves of your divided life. His aim is to liberate you entirely and cut off the deep root of your distress. He challenges you each to engage this fundamental question. Who are you? What are you? Who is the real one? Is it the one who drinks your coffee in your PJs with uncombed hair? The professional who addresses a client or a meeting? The mother, the father, the lover? Every day, Master Zuigin would call to himself, "Master, Master!" And he himself answered, "Yes, yes!" And then he would say, "Never be deceived by others, any day, any time. No, no, I will not." Who really called? Who really answered? What did he mean, "don't be deceived"? And how do we avoid repeating all our mistakes in an endless cycle, driven blindly by old habits, karmic forces? Here is Chen at home in bed. Here is Chen running along the river bank. "Wait, wait, wait for me!" Rich is the real one. The mother and wife, the dreamer, whispering, "Come back, come back." When the fact of your life in this moment is division, when you are longing for two things at the same time, torn between one course of action and another, in that instant, how are you free? Because you are free. From the beginning, completely unbound. So what is that freedom? Be careful. Be careful. This freedom cannot be restricted to the psychological level. Look below language. In fact, these words, my words, may deceive you. Who is the real one? It may sound like an invitation to look for a real self hidden below the division, but still an intact, concrete being. A true spirit, maybe a more authentic self. But when you look, really look, you won't find anything fixed. And much as you may worry about the ego as if it were some destructive being inside you that you have to get rid of, you can't actually show it to me. This ego, it's just an idea, a concept, not a problem. Even delusion, truth, nirvana, samsara, self, other, even Buddha, these are all concepts. None of them are the real fact of this moment, the fact that is beyond all words. This real one, it's not a human being, not an improved, better you, perhaps an egoless you, which just needs to be uncovered. And it's not anything that you can describe. And yet, at the same time, you are you. Uniquely, completely you. And when you see clearly, you recognize your face in an instant, seeing yourself for the first time. In the Denko Roku, a master said, "If you want to attain such a thing, you must be such a person. As you already are such a person, why do you worry about such a thing? How do you realize what it is to be such a person? Who is this person?" The verse provides a pointer. "Seeking it with empty hands, you return with empty hands. You grasp it actually where there is nothing to grasp from the beginning." When you fully practice, when you stay close, refrain from ideas and fantasy, that is letting your hands be empty, open to your infinite potential, not trying to be or grasp anything else, resting in what you are right now. And that is what gives you a chance to experience for yourself who and what that actually is. But unless you look to the very bottom, you cannot see it. Wu Men commented, If you are enlightened in the truth of this koan, you will then know that coming out of one husk and getting into another is like a traveler's putting up in hotels. In case you are not enlightened, don't rush around blindly. When suddenly earth, fire, water, and air are decomposed, you will be like a crab that's fallen into boiling water, struggling with its 7 arms and 8 legs. Don't say that I haven't warned you. Wu Men's comments are easy to misunderstand. There's no sense in our tradition of a discrete soul, a spirit, who moves as an intact entity from one life to another, using and discarding one body for another. This coming out of one husk and into another, it's not about reincarnating into different forms. It has to be experienced as constantly appearing into this moment, a flow of becoming that is our life of now. Past, future, these are fantasies, mental formations. When there is no clinging to a past moment, no longing for a future state, neither past nor future are homes you own. Don't rush around wildly, distracted by your own particular condition in this moment. You can spend years with your practice focused on your condition. Just settle into your practice. There is no other time to do it. Don't move from teacher to teacher, switching from this practice to that, wasting your energy, never facing and addressing this core issue. Who are you? Earth, water, fire, air, being decomposed refers to the Chinese view of the moment of death, when all the elements are released. In that instant, how will you die? More to the point, how will you live? How do you live? Because how you die is just another moment in how you live. Why hold back, waiting, conserving your energy, saving it for when? Master Wu Tzu, when he was around 80, had taught for some 40 years. He told his monks he was going to retire. He went to his room to bathe, shave his head, and the next day he calmly died. His dying was another moment of living, each moment equally important, each met with a whole heart. Wu Men is warning us not to put off engaging this matter of birth and death, not only the death of this body, but our second-to-second birth and dying, the life of this moment. All things do pass swiftly away. You and I, we are passing away right now. And right now. Ever the same, the moon among the clouds, different from each other, mountains and valleys. How wonderful, how blessed. Is this one? Is this two? How are they the same, moon and clouds? What about mountains and valleys? Are they different? Mountains can only be mountains because of valleys. Moon and clouds, what is their relationship? I love a poem by the Korean poet Ko Eun called Echo. It's a short poem. To mountains at dusk, what are you? What are you? Are you? Are you? To choose one Chan, or for that matter, one you, is to miss her vast unborn nature, to miss your vast and unborn nature. To say the two Chans were one from the beginning or that she never existed, that also splinters her wholeness. Are there a million Chans? One running, one in bed, one arriving from the boat, one for each passing second? But the blessing of your life is not about one or two, not about no emptiness and nothing holy. Sometimes we call it intimacy, but can that word fully honor this way? The wind is your own breath leaving and entering your body. The light from the candle on the altar wraps tight around your heart. You lift your teacup and look into someone's eyes, and speech dies. Wholeness is exactly this. This. And when you are torn, oh, I so want to visit my family, but I know my wife needs me here. Oh, I'm torn completely. How is that a problem? After all, why not be torn? That tearing pain, isn't that you too? Can your heart open so wide that nothing is excluded? Unless you can live each moment from that vast place that is you, you cannot truly be at peace right in the midst of constant change. Because that change, it is you yourself, the traveler who is just the journey. Loving, smiling, laughing, crying. All blessed. No one doing it. Why chop your life into little pieces? From the beginning you are blessed. You are whole. Blessed not from the outside, but in yourself, whole and complete. In the instant that pile of karmic rocks you carry around is set down, you experience the great freedom in even the smallest actions. Gratitude shines like the sun without any reservation. You know your own daily life as the complete expression of the Buddha way. Realize it yourself and be at peace. Together with all beings, we realize the way.